for listening to Acropolic Radio. This is Klaatu with episode 2 of the How To Package for GNU Linux miniseries. Today we're going to be doing RPMs. RPMs, of course, are, I guess they were sort of like the big first famous packaging format for Linux. I've always gotten the impression, I could be mistaken, but I've always kind of gotten the impression that they were the one that kind of set the stage for, oh, Linux, this is how Linux package, this is how Linux application management is done. And from what I'm understanding, that was the one that kind of established that you didn't have to compile everything from source code anymore. You could grab these packages, run a command rpm-uvh-foo.rpm, and it would do all of these magical things. And then I guess at some point, maybe at the same time, you could also, you know, remove those packages. Now at that time, there was, from you know what I've heard, no dependency resolution either. And so people would get very frustrated because they'd be trying to install Audacity 1. Or I guess, you know, it was probably like 0.1 back then. And then they would try to install, I don't know, let's say Lame or something that's kind of vaguely related to Audacity. And the version of Lame that they had downloaded would be something that's newer or older than the one that Audacity was using. So then they couldn't install both at the same time and whatever. Dependency hell is what they called it, and RPM has become sort of famous for the one that, you know, oh, RPMs, that must mean that you're going to have trouble with dependencies. Funny enough, I've never had any problems with dependencies on RPM, Slack builds. Really, the only one I've had problems on is .deb, and wait, don't get all panicky because I don't like .debs or something. I think that when people have dependency issues, it's largely because they're not familiar with the way that package manager works. And the one format, or the one package manager that I don't tend to use, well, until very recently, I didn't tend to use very often, as often as the others, was the .deb stuff, because I just didn't have that much Debian going on. Lately, because of the PowerPC computers that I've found lying around at my new job, I've actually been doing a lot of .deb work, and when I first started that, I would literally run into dependency problems. But now that I actually kind of start to, you know, I've read up on apt-get and aptitude and stuff, and now I'm starting to understand how it all works. And suddenly those dependency problems have gone away. Coincidence? I don't think so. So, I don't know. I'm not saying that people never had dependency problems, because I'm sure they did. But I certainly have never had that issue with RPMs or Slack builds myself. And now that I understand, for instance, .deb, I don't have any problems with that either. Ports, I don't think I've even used enough to even fairly say. So, dependencies. I don't know. It could be an issue. It could not be. I guess it depends on your workflow. Point being, RPMs came along, and then a little tool called Yum came along. Yum was apparently devised by Yellow Dog Linux, which was the PlayStation and PowerPC port of Fedora, or something like that, or a version of it. And I've run a little bit of Yellow Dog, but I think right when I was getting into Linux, that was kind of getting out of being a very active force. If it was ever an active force, I don't know. But Yum is really the apt-get of RPM. So if Debian has dpkg and apt-get, and of course aptitude, then that in Red Hat land would be RPM and Yum. You can use both, actually, and fairly recently I've actually started using RPM more, not really because I wanted to, but because there were some little tasks that I had to do that when you're doing it with RPM, there are some very specific options that you can pass to do exactly what you want, and suddenly I felt like I knew what I was doing. So, once again, with packaging, I'm doing this on actually a Red Hat system, Red Hat 6, or RHEL 6. And when you're doing that, and this is a fresh install, so you want to either have a fresh install, or you want to have a VM running what will obviously be a fresh install, because it's a virtual machine. You can revert back to a snapshot or do a literal fresh install every time you build a package. And that is very important. I also make a user. I tend to try to make that user fairly generic, just because I think the goal behind that is so that you're not accidentally screwing up your own system and you're not accidentally giving away a whole bunch of information about yourself or whatever. Make it an individual user for this process, and then you need to install the things that you're going to need in order to be a RPM builder. And unlike on the very fine Slackware distribution, not everything just comes included. You have to actually kind of hunt around. Well, not hunt around, but you have to do a little bit of work. So the work that you have to do is, well, really in this case, what you should do is become root and then do a yum group list and then do a search, or a grep rather, a search for, let's just do devel. And that will search through the repositories that you've got, and it will look for the groups that Fedora and I guess Red Hat and CentOS and all the Scientific Linux and all those other ones group their applications into. And this is a really nice feature of Yum. I don't know if there's an equivalent on Aptitude or not, but probably on Aptitude it would be like a meta package or something. But group installs are actually sort of, they're just someone at Fedora or someone at Red Hat decided to group a whole bunch of applications together into a handy mega download and install, and you just have these groups that you can do a group install of. I really like it, actually. And it's yum group install. It's all one. It's yum and then group install is one word. In this case, it would be development tools. So the full command after you find that there is a development tools thing, it would be yum group install space quote development tools. And you want to, I think it's a little bit forgiving in terms of the capitalization, I think, if I recall correctly. But you do have to quote it. You want to escape that space in the name of the group. You hit return. And that's going to install a bunch of stuff. Like, once that's finished installing all those nice compiling tool applications and things, you'll need to install one more tool, which is called yum install space RPM dev tools. And that is all one phrase, RPM dev tools. And that's the stuff that you're going to need for this RPM development exercise. Now, online, if you look into, and as you should, look into the tutorials on building RPM files, you might see references to RPM devtools-setup-tree. And this is supposed to be a command that will create the skeletal structure of kind of an RPM development environment for you automagically. And it does that, but it only does it to the slash root directory, as I've discovered. I cannot redirect it apparently. I've tried doing rpm dev dash setup tree to the directory that I want it to set up that tree into, rpm dev dash setup tree redirecting to the current directory, all kinds of things. I just can't get it to do that. I think it might be a legacy command, assuming that still assumes that you're building in your root directory. But every piece of advice online that I have seen urges you not to do that, to not build your package as root user. So I do not use the RPM dev dash setup tree. I simply make the directories myself, and it's not hard. So I make a folder in my home directory, and I call it RPM build. Pretty simple, kind of obvious. And then you simply have to make 6 directories in the RPM build directory. So you've got a tilde slash RPM build, and then you can go into there, cd RPM build, and then simply make dir build, all capitals, space build root, all capital, RPMs, so that's RPMS, all capital, space sources, all capitals, space specs, all capitals, space SRPMs, and that's it. That's 6 directories that you can create, and now you've got your RPM build environment. That is what all the RPM build tools are going to expect and kind of want to see by default. So if you don't have that environment set up, your build will fail. All right, so we're still working on the Yes Please application, which, if you'll remember from the last episode, is Sigflup's little command line application that takes a screenshot and uploads it to a site. And the Yes Please program is really great for this exercise, like I said last time, because it is just a little bit complex. It's just complex enough to cause us to actually work at it and to give us a good taste of what a really, really complex application might involve on a larger scale. But at the same time, it's really, really a small application. There's not a whole lot to it, and it turns out to be a really short build or a script. So the center of the RPM world is the spec file, and that is a spec file is like a Slack build. That's how I would like the Slack build file. That's how I would think of it, and that is yes, please, in this case, dot spec. Now you've got a spec file. That spec file goes, guess where? Yes, in the specs directory. So if we're in cd, or if we're in rather /rpm build/specs, all capitals, and we touch yes please, that's YESPLZ dot spec, then we've got that file. And if I do a less on the yes please spec that I actually have, which I'll have to link to this RPM in the show notes so that you can download it and follow along, the spec file is going to pass different variables and different options and different instructions to the RPM or YUM front end. There are some things that are included in the RPM program that makes a spec file fairly easy to write compared to all that code that we had in the Slack build. If you remember your reaction, or what your reaction might have been when you opened up the Yes Please Slack build, and mind you, that was a pretty simple Slack build. There's a lot of code there. There's a lot of detection going on. There's a lot of stuff happening in that shell script. RPM, because it's a big, hefty application all on its own, it has a lot of that information that it can kind of figure out, and you don't have to write that into your spec file. For instance, there's no code block in here trying to figure out if we're building on 32 or 64-bit. RPM will take care of that for us. There's no variable that we have to assign for a libdir suffix, just in case we're building on a 64-bit system and not a 32-bit system. RPM will just kind of handle that for us. So a couple of like really nice conveniences. It's just that you have to kind of get used to them being there, because at first glance, this spec file especially is going to look pretty sparse. So here we are. Spec file for yes, please. I'm not going to go line by line, but I think you'll get the idea. So the first line is a percent sign define, and the percent sign is the RPM notation for a macro, as it were, a preset kind of thing that's going to get translated into a completely different process once we start running RPM build on this. So the percent define is obviously defining a variable, and in this case we're saying underscore top dir is /home/clatu/rpm build. That is the top directory of our RPM building world. That is that our RPM doesn't need to know that anything outside of home/clatu/rpm build even exists. Next line, of course, you see a percent define name. This is exactly like the program name variable in Slack build, and that is just yes please. It's not the full string of all the versioning stuff. It has nothing to do with that. Percent define release, well, this is release one. This is the first release of a yes please package, RPM package, that I've ever released. So again, this like in Slackware, this is the build version, sort of. Percent define version, this is the versioning number, and again, this is where Sigflup kind of scorns the entire world and their petty conventions, and she boldly names her version AUG_4_2010. Traditionally speaking, more often than not, I think you're going to see things like 0.8, 1.0, 1.4, 2.3.33, whatever. It's going to be a series of numbers and stuff, unless Sigflup wrote it. Percent define space build root, we are telling it that the build root is our top directory, the name of the application, the version of the application, -root. This should look really, really familiar again from that Slack build, because if you recall in the Slack build, we said that we want to define a temp directory, and then inside of that temp directory, we want to define that there's a package and the version of that, and that everything's going to be sent there. Same thing is going on here. Next line says that the build root is /var/temp/%name-build root. So this is a very, very temporary thing. That's why it's going into var, because it's a variable-sized file that actually we're going to ditch after we've built it. But we want a working space, and we throw that out to /var/temp. A summary, that's human information. In this case, I put one line. Yes, please, screenshot uploader for unixporn.com. License, GPL. I don't know that that's true. I'm assuming it's GPL. I should probably ask Sigflup sometime about that. Name, %name. We've already defined that for up in the script. Again, like I say, this is all so similar. Slack build, remember how I was like raving about how they did all the variables at the top of the script? Well, this is exactly what we've done here, right? We've defined a number of variables. Now for everything underneath that. We just keep referring back to those variables so that if there is a big change, Sigflop suddenly changes it to yes, please, properly spelled, yes, P-L-E-A-S-E. All we have to do is change the word yes, please once in the script because everything else just refers back to that variable. Same for the release. Not necessarily the same for the source. The source is going to be the name-version and then dot, in this case, TGZ. Now, if your source code that you're compiling for or that you're building a package for ends in .tar.gz or tar.bz2 or .zip or .7z or .whatever, then you're going to want to change that extension. So this is the line, just like in the Slack build script, where you have to kind of remember to actually change that appropriately, or else when you run your build, it's going to say that no file existed, and you'll probably spend like 10 minutes wondering what's going wrong, and you'll realize that you just forgot to give it the proper extension. I speak from experience. The next line defines our prefix, which in this case is /usr. This again is going to be something that you kind of have to watch, keep an eye on. I think normally it's going to be /usr, but you might have to change it if you look through the source code and you see things happening in the install script or whatever, where you actually need to account for some kind of unique thing. In this case, it's /usr. All that's saying is that when we're doing our RPM build, when we're doing our little script and everything, we're simply saying that it's a given that the prefix is going to be /usr. Now, within usr, there might be a bin, an etsy, a doc, whatever, a share, you know, whatever other folders we're going to be dumping into our little build, but the one that we can always account for is going to be /usr. The group, I put it in development tools, which is completely wrong. I have no idea what the group assignments are on Fedora or Red Hat. I've never really bothered looking it up. And then the requires. Now, this is an interesting one because if you do a really simple application that doesn't have any dependency at all, and they do exist, then you won't have a requires line. But in this case, we have a requires line because, as you'll recall from last week, this requires X11, libjpg, and actually pthreads. Well, pthreads is already in Red Hat and Fedora and Scientific Linux and CentOS, so we don't have to really worry about that one. But libx11 and libjpg, well, actually, they both are as well, but see, we're on Red Hat now, or Fedora, so it's not like Slackware, where all the header files come along with the application that you've got. So in this case, we need to require that the user has libx11-devel and libjpg-devel. So those are the development files that go along with, for instance, libx11 and libjpg. And that's not installed by default on even a pretty robust install. They're just not going to have those files because they don't assume that everyone's going to need the development versions or the development files that go along with those applications. Here, case matters very much. So we're saying libx11-devel and libjpg-devel. It's lib, lowercase lib, capital X11-devel. So that sort of thing really, really matters, because what you're going to find is that if you were to run this RPM script, like actually do an RPM install, like RPM-UVH, yes please, blah, 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 RPM, then it would stop and tell you this requires libx11-devel before it can build. Or that and the libjpg one. So you'd have to go into root user and do a yum search for libx11 and libjpg and find out the name of, you know, those libraries. And of course on Fedora it's going to be one thing, and then on Debian it's going to be another, and I'm sure on some other distribution it's yet another. Fedora usually has that -devel at the end, and I guess they often put lib in the front. I actually haven't really noticed lately, but then Debian will just say like jpeg libs-dev or something like that, and it's not devel. So you kind of have to hunt around for these things, but you know, I mean, yum and aptitude both have really, really fuzzy searches, so you can find them, but you do have to be aware of what they're called, how they're capitalized, and the exact, you know, naming scheme, or else it won't realize that you're not you know, you need to be able to flag it. You're flagging it for the user so that you're not trying to build something against libraries and header files and stuff that don't actually exist. So the requires line is where you define that. And then the next line is the description. I put in a fairly long description here simply because I could. And then the next line is percent prep, which is another one of those little macros. So that's doing a little preparation step. And if you do an RPM build of this, you actually get to see what those little macros, as it were, or placeholders, or whatever you want to call them, what those actually do. And the percent prep unzips, or, you know, untars the source directory. And then the percent setup does something else. So those are presets that you almost don't even have to think about. They're two common steps that almost every time you're doing an RPM, you're going to be doing that, unless, I don't know, for some reason you don't have to uncompile the source or something like that. Next step is percent build, and the build step that we want to define here normally would be ./configure and then make. In this case, we do not do that because of that line in the Slack build that I wrote myself that I'd forgotten when I was doing the RPM, that the install script that Sigflup uses for a normal sort of command line-y kind of install doesn't quite work the way that RPM or Slack build or port actually wanted it to work. So you would just do a ./configure here, and then under the install step, we're going to remove the RPM build root, and we do that forcefully and recursively because we don't want any old versions of our build lying around. And then we'll make a directory in the RPM build root, in the new one that we're making right now, /usr/bin. So the RPM build root is a standard variable for /var/temp/%name-build root. And we defined that up at the top of the script. If you'll look up there, right above the license and the summary, you'll see the build root being defined. So that's where the RPM build root is. We've just made that, and we've made two directories inside of it, a /usr and a /bin. Then we do a make install, but we define the prefix as being as equaling the RPM build root /usr, and that ensures that the binary that we're building is being sent to the prefix of the RPM build root /usr. And that's a little bit of a hack due to the make file and the install script that Sigflup wrote into her program. Not a problem, just something to be aware of. And again, it's kind of one of those things that makes it fun. If you go and do an RPM build, for instance, of wget or something like that, that's just really pretty straightforward, then you might even find it even more clear in a way, because it's really just a replicate. It's just like compiling the thing from source, except you're kind of outlining it a little bit more. You know, you're telling another application to do those steps, and you're just making sure that it's doing those steps and sending the results into a certain directory. In this case, as I've said, RPM build root /usr is our starting point. So then we do a clean step. And again, on the Slack build, we did the same thing. If you remember at the very end of the script, after we did the install, we do a little bit of cleanup. Pretty common. It's pretty nice. And the step that we actually do is that we get rid of the RPM build root. Why would we do that? Well, it's because the install step includes grabbing everything from the RPM build root and dumping it into the appropriate files here in our RPM build directory. When I first saw that, I was very, very confused as to why we were removing something so soon. I didn't have that line in there at all, because I kept swearing that surely would take everything that I've just created and delete it, because I was still thinking very much in Slack build terms, where you've just built this package in /temp/sbo, and so we need to still go into that package and do the make pkg step, right? We can't remove that yet. Well, we can, because you're not, in this spec file, you're not seeing everything that's actually happening. That'll become really clear in a minute once we run the actual RPM build script. So we've just cleaned up after ourselves. That's nice. And then we'll do a percent files. This is actually really important. This isn't just nice. This is something that RPM needs in order to, or RPM build needs, in order to make sure that everything you want in the package itself makes its way into that package. So it's percent files, and then percent def attr, so defining attributes as a parentheses dash comma root parentheses, close parentheses. So again, just like in Slack builds, we're taking everything that we've just built and we've choned it essentially, to root. Root. Why? Well, because this is a package. It belongs to root. This is the root's domain. They take packages and they install it under the system. And they shouldn't be owned by other users, by other random users that might not even exist on that machine, for instance. So that's a good step to do. And then the next line is the first file that we want included in the RPM, which is /usr/bin/yesplease. And then we've got a %doc. And again, that's another little macro, see, because it's going to automatically make all the little documentation directories in our package for us, so we don't have to worry about that. So %doc space readme space shouts, because she has a file in there called shouts, where she gives shout outs to various people. And that's really it. That's the spec file. It's pretty much that simple. So the only other thing that we need to do, which in real life I think we would have already done at this point, but we need to go into the sources directory, and we need to wget the source. And the source, of course, lives somewhere on a server, which I will have to include in the show notes, but you might already have it from the last episode as well. If you followed along with the last episode at all, you might still have that .tgz. Now the one thing that we have to do for the RPM that we didn't do for the Slack build, but that I do have to do for the port file as well, is change the name of her source directory and change the name of what it untars to. This is a little, we can do this because this is an example. This is sigflup. We know sigflup. We all love sigflup. We can change the source package name. It's fine. If this was something that was coming, if some monolithic application coming from some organization that you might not have complete say over how that package gets named, we might have to do that with some kind of extra script. Slack build has an allowance for that sort of thing. RPM has an allowance for that. All the packaging formats will let you do that. I'm not doing anything like that for Yes Please. I've had to do it before for Lives, the video editor for a Slack build. I had to change the name because it unzipped to something other than what it was zipped up as, which wreaks havoc on your packaging script, because you're telling it, okay, the name of this program is Lives, or Yes Please with a capital Y and a capital P, but then once I unzip it, suddenly the name becomes different. Well, that doesn't work, because now the script doesn't recognize it anymore. So in this case, we're going to just cheat, and we're going to do a /tar-xf/yesplease_aug_4/2010.tgz, and we see that it does indeed unzip to yesplease_aug_4/2010, but we're going to move yesplease_aug to yesplease-aug_4/2010.2010. So now we've just made that directory have a dash after the name, because remember last time I said that there was that convention of the program archive being, or the package being called the program name dash the version number dot compression. So in this case, we're giving it a dash, because that's what RPM assumes your package is going to be named. That's the scheme it is assuming. So the Yes Please becomes the name, the aug 4 2010 becomes the version string, and then .tgz is the compression. So that fits the convention now. Now let's zip it back up, or tar it back up. So we'll do a tar-cf create file, Yes Please -aug_4_2010. So we're keeping the dash .tgz. Of course, the folder that we're doing this to is yesplease-aug_4_2010, and that creates our tar. And then we need to zip that up, so we'll just do a gzip yesplease-aug_4/2010.tar, and that gives us a tar.gz, and then let's just rename that to yesplease-aug_4_2010.tgz, so that we have exactly what Sigflup gave us, except one little dash is different, but I don't even think she's going to notice. So now we've got our sources living in /rpmbuild/sources, and then /yesplease-aug_4_2010.tgz. And we've got our spec file over in our specs folder in the same RPM build. Now that is all we need. That's the structure of your pre-built RPM creation. Of course, there are other files that you can include if you need to. Lots of different options with this sort of thing, but this is the basic. So now we need to issue a command, the command called rpm build. And that's what we downloaded with those dev tools, the RPM dev tools. So we've got RPM build space dash B A or dash BB, and I'll tell you the difference in a moment, space yes please dot spec. Well, actually, we're not in spec, so let's do dot slash specs slash yes please dot spec there. So we've just passed the RPM build command with the option of dash BA, which means to build all, meaning build a binary distribution as well as a source distribution. So we're going to have two different RPMs at the end of this process if we press return now. And then, of course, the space dot slash specs slash yes please dot spec is the path to the spec file, because the spec file is the thing that RPM build looks to on how it should be run. Now, if you don't care about the source package, I don't know why you wouldn't for this particular program, because it's so small and it takes no time to compile it. But if you are doing binary builds and you don't care about the source RPM, then you don't have to do a dash BA. You can do a dash BB, and that will build only the binary RPM package. So it's up to you, and it kind of depends on what you're building. So anyway, you press enter now on that, and it goes through the spec file, and you can, as I say, now that we know all the little macros that we put into our spec file, we can actually see what that's being translated into. You might have to scroll up for it, but you get the information, and you can see where we said percent prep, it's untarring the thing, and when we said percent setup, it's doing something else, and when you said percent install, it's actually moving files around all over the place. So there's a lot of other stuff going on that you didn't actually write here, and that threw me off a little bit too, because again, I was pretty used to Slack builds where the only thing that happened was exactly what I wrote, with the exception of that make PKG step at the very, very end. But then that's make PKG. I mean, who doesn't know that command? So there's an RPM now, but where is it? Well, it could be of one of two places. One will be in the slash, or if you're in RPM build, then dot slash RPMs, all capital, and then you'll see in there's an x86 underscore 64, or you might be on a different machine, so it might be an i486, or 586 rather, whatever. Go into that folder, and you'll see that sure enough, there's your nice new RPM, along with a debug info version of it as well. I don't need debug info, there's no bugs in Sigflip's applications. So there we go. If we did right now, if we switched over to root and we said rpm-u, capital U, VH, dot slash RPMs, x86 underscore 64, yes please, dash August, asterisk RPM, and did that, then it installs it without any problems. Now, of course, if this were a real fresh install, which I admit for this episode I didn't actually set one up, but when I did set one up for the actual RPM, it errored out. It said, well, I can't do this because you don't have libx11 built, and you don't have libjpeg, or the development files for those. So I had to go back through and do a yum install of those development files. Now, there's a way that you can differentiate between a library or an application that it needs to build versus an application that it needs to run, so that, you know, if the user has a library not installed but it doesn't actually need that library to build itself, then you could let it compile, but it wouldn't run. Or you can say, well, look, both of these are essentially the same. You need both, you know, you need all of these different libraries or whatever in order to build and to run, and I'm not going to let you do anything until you have those. It's all up to you and how you think that this packaging thing needs to be done. Okay, so back to our little folder here. So I'm getting out of root now. So now if I do an ls on dot slash srpms, then you see that there's a single RPM in there, and that's a source RPM. So it's yes please dash aug 4/2010-1 dot src dot RPM, meaning that when someone goes to build that, it's going to build the code. It's going to build it from source. The more common one is an RPM binary. You know, I mean, that's kind of what RPMs are known for. It's a binary distribution. They give you the binary that just simply gets extracted from the RPM and sprinkled across your file system, and suddenly you're running the application. And, you know, honestly, that's about it for RPMs. I mean, that's how they're made, and that is how they are actually constructed. and that's where they get dumped to. And what more can I say? That's RPM. So RPM dash capital U underscore, I mean, lowercase v, lowercase h, space, name of RPM dot RPM. That's the install command. If you ever want to then remove that package, then it would be RPM space dash e for erase, name of that package. And then it will erase the really all traces of that application from your system, provided that other things haven't come along and started depending on, you know, yes, please. If someone creates a file, a new application called more, 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 and that requires yes, please in order to run, then, okay, you're going to need both of those things on your system. Of course, there are a number of great, great tutorials online. There's an entire book on the subject. I think it's called Maximum RPM or something like that. And there's just a lot of great info, all the different kinds of things that you can do, definitions for all those little shortcuts, those macros that you can use to simplify your spec file for yourself. And of course, I mean, RPMs can call other RPMs via yum, so it can get pretty complex and pretty cool. RPMs are fairly common on the interwebs. Finding an application that does not yet have an RPM associated to it might be a little bit difficult. Heck, there are even source code files sometimes that ship with a spec file included, and you can actually build the RPM from the spec file that the developer wrote for you. You know, I mean, RPMs are pretty popular. I don't know how much in need they are of people to create new RPMs for applications that people are just dying to have. However, I do think that finding something that might be not quite up to date or something like that, and offering to help maintain that package and keep it up to date, that could be something you might want to get into. So the first step is obviously just to build RPMs for yourself, to learn that, and then once you've gotten pretty comfortable with it, you can take on larger applications and try to build applications that are a little bit more complex than, for instance, yes please or wget. I'll try to have some links in the show notes on different tutorials online, and have a good time with that. And as always, thank you very much for listening. Next episode, we're going to cover BSD port system, and we'll build one for Yes Please.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.